Hello, welcome back. We now have with us Matthew Wilcox, a man of many talents. He's a PA risk hacker, a PCI hacker, a Itanium hacker, got code everywhere. And today he's going to be talking about something that's pretty close to everybody's heart who has to reboot a machine all the time. Why does it take so long? Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you. Someone's clearly been looking me up on the interweb to find out about all my talents. So today, mostly I'm going to be talking about SCSI, because that was what motivated me to start looking at this problem. Let's just try something. How's that? It seems that every new computer you get takes longer to boot. Van Jackerson talks about the PDP-11. I guess that's the difference between my heritage and his. In my paper, I write about 6502 and Z80 microcomputers. Do you remember when you turned on a computer and it was, and there was the prompt? We've lost something, haven't we? I can't do anything about the BIOS. I don't write your BIOS. I can't do much about user space. I just don't have that kind of time. I'm concentrating on why the kernel itself takes so long to start. If you look at the proportion of time on your laptop the kernel takes to start, it's probably not much. It's maybe 10 or 20 seconds. People who use Linux in cell phones think this is ridiculous. I know the RT Linux people have patches that make Linux take like 250 microseconds to boot. And that's where we should be at. But as you'll see as we get into this talk, there are some things where the specification just says it takes this long, and you have to let it take that long, or you don't get the disk. But it's not just about newer machines take longer. I find bigger and faster machines take longer to boot, generally because they've got more stuff in them. If you're buying a machine with 64 CPUs in it, chances are it doesn't just have 64 CPUs. Maybe you've got a terabyte of memory. Maybe you've got a lot of I.O. cards. This machine doesn't, the picture here doesn't actually depict a machine that can have 16 I.O. chassis. If you buy 16 I.O. chassis, we also sell you a nice big cabinet to sit alongside and hold the cards that just won't fit. Get 12 PCIX slots per chassis, 192 PCIX slots. So what happens? So customers will typically put, the customer who will buy that kind of configuration will typically put about 100 fiber channel cards into that machine. This kind of customer doesn't buy parallel SCSI, that's just irrelevant to them. You can't physically cable 100 SCSI cards, so they switch to fiber channel. You'd get the same problem if you put 100-odd SCSI cards into a machine. But they use fiber channel. So what happens is Linux boots, Linux finds the first fiber channel card. It takes about 30 seconds to scan that fiber channel card. Then it finds the next card. And then it takes 30 seconds to scan that card too. Then comes the third card. This one's got two channels on it. It's a dual port card. So it takes 60 seconds. So it takes 30 seconds to scan each bus. Some customers feel that it should not take an hour and a half to boot a machine. They've paid for 64 CPUs. They think it should go faster than that. I'm inclined to agree. So let's see, try and use all 64 CPUs. How do you do that? Lots of threads. So I started out just saying, okay, let's do a dry run. Actually, Anton Blanchard has helped me out there by doing a dry run about 6 months earlier. What he had done was to prevent any of the SCSI adapters from probing devices and then had a little tool that went in user space that would go and find devices later, and everything printed, and everything got discovered much more quickly. So I just changed the subsystem to spawn a thread for each host, and things booted much faster. I shaved a few minutes off the boot time of my admittedly somewhat smaller system with maybe 8 SCSI cards in it. One of the things I found is, well, we all know SCSI is a pretty verbose kind of subsystem. It likes to chat to you, let it know what it's doing. But one of its weirder facets was that it chose to, we kind of found a device on a SCSI bus. It would tell you a lot about it, because these devices come with identification strings. They tell you the vendor, and they tell you the model name, and they tell you what version of SCSI command set they implement. And we would print out one character at a time. We'd call to print K, 35 in all, to print out these strings. I thought that was a bit silly. And it's a bit more than silly, it's a bit more than overhead, because Linux guarantees you atomicity of a given print K. So if you print an entire line, you will get that line. But if you print one character and you print another character, another thread can come along in the middle and print something else. And that just makes it completely mangled. You can't tell what you've been probing. So I just changed it. It was a patch that deleted 40 lines and replaced it with one long print K. I also made it a bit less verbose in its output, so I condensed the two lines of information it had taken onto one line. So that was a big win for SCSI. I mean, think about it, right? You've got 100 SCSI host adapters. Just think how many SCSI devices you must have. It's kind of nice to chop a few thousand lines out of the customer's D-message buffer. But what I wanted to do, the prototype was fine, the prototype worked, but what I wanted to do was preserve disk naming. Now, disk naming in SCSI is certainly a bone of contention. I'm sure many people here have had the joys of adding or removing a SCSI device and finding that their root file system just got renamed and their machine no longer boots. I wasn't quite up to the task of fixing that, but I did want to preserve the limited stability guarantees that we have. We currently guarantee if you don't change your configuration at all, your devices will get the same names when you boot the next time. And that's a good thing. It lets people with very simple configurations be pretty sure that they know when their configuration is going to change. For stuff like Fiber Channel, I just don't understand how people cope, to be honest. So how was I going to go about doing that? Well, I dug down through the code, and I found that devices only get their names, SCSI devices, SCSI drives in particular, only get their names when they're added to SysFS. So if I can go through and discover all these devices, and then pass them all to SysFS en masse in the right order, I'll get the stability of name that I want. This wasn't too hard to do. We already have a list of devices for each host. Each host knows which devices belong to it. So I just let the SCSI system go and fill all that stuff in the way it normally does, and just skip the last little step where we're going to add them to SysFS. And then I would run through the list at the end and add them all to SysFS. And that worked really well. In fact, it worked a little too well, because the first time I tried it, it managed to start before we'd managed to find the root file system. And that didn't work out too well. But I fixed that. I introduced a little function that would go and look at the list of hosts that were still scanning, and it would wait until that list was empty, and then it would return. So all we had to do was call that very late in the init process, and hopefully by that time everything would have finished. But if not, then we just waited a few seconds for everything to have finished, and then it returned. So, flushed with my success, I send the patch out to the mailing list, and I get reports that this doesn't build. I mean, not boost, I can understand, people have different setups to me. This doesn't build. That's a painful one to get. You know, you didn't test this, is what that's saying. I'm a bit old school. I build my kernels monolithic. Some people, like distributions, like to build everything as a module. And what you can't do with a module is have two init calls. And what I'd done was to call the SCSI, this was part of the main SCSI module. And I actually had an init call that says, let's start up SCSI. And what I'd done was add a second init call that said, let's wait for the SCSI scans to finish. So James Bottomley actually came up with the final solution to that, which was to introduce a new module called SCSI wait scan. And what you do is, if you're using modules, heathens that you are, you insert all your modules. And of course, because all the scans are happening asynchronously to the loading of the modules, you don't know when any of them are finished. But you load the SCSI wait scan module, and it waits. It's exactly the same function that I was talking about just a minute ago, but let me find root. So that was actually very, very nice. That was good. So I'd solved the problem for the system that I was working on. Unfortunately, fiber channel drivers, and for that matter, serial attached storage, they don't have a bus, per se. With traditional SCSI, you go out and you enumerate from 0 to 7, and you see, is there a device here, is there a device here? Fiber channel, you can't do that. I mean, for one thing, it's impractical. There's over 4 billion possible things, and you really don't want to be waiting, you know, 3 seconds per 4 billion devices. So they have their own special ways of finding SCSI targets. And so instead of calling SCSI scan host, which is where I put all my magic, they were calling SCSI scan target. So, second phase, I came with these cute functions called SCSI prep async scan and SCSI finish async scan. So you call SCSI prep async scan, then you go off and you find all the devices in your specific manner, and then you call SCSI finish async scan. SCSI finish async scan goes and adds all the devices to SysFS. So I then tried to use those. I wrote a little function called SCSI target discovery. It wasn't called that initially. It was called FC target discovery, and I put it into the fiber channel layer. But once I'd finished writing it, I realized that it really wasn't fiber channel specific. It was all generic. So I moved it over into the SCSI mid layer and called it SCSI target discovery. So again, flush with success, I send the patch out. And this time, people say, yeah, I don't like the way you've done that. I don't like the way you've done that. Okay, fine. So James Smart in particular said that he didn't like the way that I'd given him I'd made him create a function pointer. He had concerns about reference counting, about object lifetimes, and he wanted, instead of me passing a function pointer to SCSI target discovery, he wanted to have a function in the SCSI host template. Once I'd done that, I then compared SCSI target discovery and SCSI scan host, and they were very, very, very similar. So I actually changed SCSI scan host to do all the work necessary for fiber channel and SAS drivers. All they have to do is fill in a couple of functions in the SCSI host target, and it will, and SCSI scan host will go and call them, and everything will. So I've got most of this merged into 2620 RC1, so it's all there now, and you can go and play with it. if you've got an Emulex fiber channel card, the patches are available. They've been posted to them exclusively. They haven't been merged yet. I'm waiting for Emulex to sign off on them and submit them themselves. Derek Wong of IBM found the bugs in my patches for the Adaptec AIC 94XX SAS driver, which was very good of him. So that patch is now, I'm not sure if he's posted that patch yet. I invited him to, but I'm not sure if he did or not. If not, then I'll send it out when I get home. I've done patches for the Libata drivers. So this is for serial ATA, as this particular laptop has, for example. Some ATA host adapters, the Intel ones we mentioned in particular, seem to take a long time to initialize, and I'm not quite sure why. It may or may not be a bug, but users say, this takes a long time, can we use your infrastructure? Yes, you can. Jeff Garzik doesn't like the patch. I don't quite understand his reason for not liking the patch. We're just having a communication problem, I think. So there's a bunch of other fiber channel drivers, ZFCP for the S390 and FC4 for Spark. I don't have any of those machines, so I'm not particularly motivated to write those patches. It's not hard to change drivers to work with it. Your regular parallel SCSI drivers, Ultra 16C, Ultra 320, all the way back to SCSI 1, they all call SCSI scan host. They don't need to be changed at all. It's just the fiber channel and SAS that need to be changed. So if you have a large system, that 90 minutes goes down to about 30 seconds. That's good. Maybe a minute, because you know they don't all start at exactly the same time. So people with very large systems are big winners, because now they can reboot their machines twice in 1 year, and they won't fail their 5 nines uptime. People with only one SCSI bus win. Even though I'm only scanning the... all I've parallelized is scanning the SCSI bus. I haven't parallelized doing the scanning within the SCSI bus. So you'll still only scan one potential target at a time if you've only got one SCSI bus. You still win because other things that take time to initialize, like USB, like IEEE 1394, these will go off and initialize in parallel with you doing your scan. So that can actually be a fairly big win. You can probably get another 10 seconds off your boot time by using these patches. The USB and FireWire devices, they use the SCSI system in an interesting way. They create one SCSI host per pseudo SCSI device. And my patch really doesn't help with that, because you've got to wait until the USB device comes online before you create a SCSI host for it. So the USB stack needs to have its own parallel probing mechanism. You can't use SCSI to help with this. You could use SCSI to help with this if the USB people change the way that USB storage works, because they could create one host for all USB storage devices, and then you'd be able to use this technique as is, with very, very minor modifications, and it would solve the problem for them. I've talked to them a bit about this, and they're not convinced the benefits outweigh the cost of doing a rewrite. Yes, Scott? What's the interaction with the Libata? Libata is not similar to USB in that regard. The reason is that we actually do go off and scan the bus with Libata, and Libata, that's the bit that takes time. So we can let Libata go off and find more serial ATA hosts while we're scanning that first bus. So it is a big improvement for Libata. Any more questions? Oh, okay. Power consumption. So I talk a lot in the abstract about SCSI devices, and it's important to remember these things are actually big, heavy sheets of rotating metal oxide. It takes a lot to get them started. The peak power draw of a spinning disk is much higher than the power required to keep it moving. So, I mean, back in the olden days, people with PDP-11s can, I'm sure, tell stories about the walking disk packs and similar problems, but it can actually be a problem. If you try and spin up all the disks in the machine at once, you can blow a fuse. I mean, I don't have any machines that can do that because my firmware has already started everything spinning by the time the Linux gets to see it. So I'm not affected. I hand wave around this issue a bit because I'm still only scanning one bus per target at a time. So one device on each bus at a time. I'm making the assumption that different buses are going to have different power, they're going to be in different power domains. They're going to have a different transformer. They're going to be protected by a different fuse. This is probably a good assumption. If it's not a good assumption, then I recommend you say no to the kconfig option that says turn on parallel scanning. So back in last summer at Kernel Summit, Greg and Lena started talking about doing PCI parallel probe, and the patch went into Linux's trees mere days later. If you're going to probe all your PCI devices in parallel, it's going to do good things for non-SCSI devices like USB. USB takes about a tenth of a second per host adapter. But the downside is that devices get named at random because you don't know what order things are going to be discovered in from one boot to the next. We've also had problems with some drivers assuming that the probe routine is single-threaded. And when all of a sudden it's not, they break. And he hit the same problem that I did when I first started on the async SCSI patches, that your disks sometimes don't get found before init starts. He could use some of the techniques that I've done, but Greg has a much wider variety of much more broken hardware to deal with. And the patch is to mark the option broken and experimental and broken again and experimental again. I've gone in and out of the tree three or four times now. So I'm not convinced this is going to be working anytime soon. Well, I'm racing through this. So I'd like to thank my employer, Hewlett Packard, for sending me. I'd like to thank Justin Chan, who I've been working with closely with HP. He's the guy who had the 64-way Superdome, and he's been invaluable testing patches, trying stuff out. James Bottomley contributed a small amount of code and a lot of ideas. Andrew Vasquez of Keylogic, James Smart of Emulex, Eric Moore of LSI, and we all sat down together at OLS and hammered out a design that would work for all their different fiber channel needs. Anton Blanchard of IBM for doing the original proof of concept. Derek Wong of IBM for fixing the AdaptTech. And my wife for writing my slides and hammering my talk into shape. Questions before I move on to the next little bit?
Do you see any other subsystems thinking in terms of fast Ethernet drivers or other cards that could also be probed in power?
It was our experience that probing Ethernet cards just didn't take long enough to be worth trying to fix. Absolutely, we could put in that kind of initialization. I'd need to go off and learn a little bit about the networking layer to do that. I don't think it would be particularly hard. I think we could do it. It just doesn't seem to be the need.
I'm also thinking to
hardware, I'm not sure what hardware goes into this machine. Right. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of additional hardware. People don't tend to have a lot of USB equipment hanging off the Superdome. It does tend to be fiber channel, gigabit or 10 gigabit Ethernet, a very little amount of Ultra 160, because it's built into the chassis for your boot devices. As I said, about half of those slots will typically be occupied by fiber channel, but the other half will be Ethernet, for whatever value of Ethernet we're talking about today. But it's just not a problem. Those cards initialize sufficiently quickly that it doesn't have a noticeable impact on boot speed. Actually, that might be a good point to segue into.
Is that not noticeable within the 90 minute boot speed?
So, I thought I'd try and make this. Oh, sorry, I've got a question. Yes, sir.
Certainly with fiber channel, there seems to be a very high level of dependency on the actual matrix of equipment that you have. And you step outside of any approved matrix and strange things start happening. You get very, very large delays sometimes. Is this going to exacerbate that at all?
No. In fact, that should alleviate the problem slightly. You see, I'm not making the scanning speed any quicker. I'm not turning down the timeouts. I'm doing everything. I'm scanning them all at the same time. So I'm giving them. So what one might be tempted to do at this point is turn up the timeouts to give these devices the standards say must take 30 seconds, give them 40 seconds, give them 60 seconds, because we're giving them 60 seconds all in parallel, so we can afford that extra time.
You mentioned that you had to do some rework on the QLogic driver, is that correct?
Yes.
Has any work been done on the LSI drivers?
Yes, the LSI drivers. So part of the discussion session we had at OLS was myself, James, and Andrew talking past Eric Moore and him talking way past us. And we eventually figured out that what's going on with LSI is that they have firmware that goes off and does this scan. And they wait for their firmware to be done before they come back. At the point where the SCSI mid-layer calls SCSI scan host, it all completes like that. Because the firmware already knows, so you send a command down to the firmware, and the firmware just gives you the answer. It doesn't go and scan the bus, it already did that, it already knows what's out there. So I do have a plan to fix that, which is to use this same infrastructure to launch the scanning thread before we go off and do the bus scan for the Fusion drivers. And so the LSI drivers will then be just as quick as everybody else. Because right now they're slow where everyone else is quick, and quick where everyone else is slow. So it just needs a bit of tweaking. But the interesting part for me was the way that we're all very intelligent people, and we're all talking way past each other, just because we didn't understand each other's architecture. We all made assumptions.
Just a final question from me, or something else later going in. Have you worked with any of the other end of the chain, such as the SAN vendors, like EMC or...?
Oh, sure, yeah. We had a storage summit in Vancouver last year, and there's another one going on that's, I believe, in San Francisco in a few weeks' time, which I'm not going to, but I went to one in Vancouver, and we had representation there from EMC and a few other storage vendors. That was a really good opportunity to get together and talk. The people who make big storage tend not to have access to big servers, and vice versa. So we were having an interesting discussion about how we could actually partner together. of course, nobody involved in the discussion was sufficient. Everyone involved in the discussion was technical, and not in management and able to make that kind of thing happen. But I think we've all gone back and mentioned it to our management. So maybe we'll manage to get some testing on the simultaneously big server, big storage systems, which of course only our customers have right now. Anyone else, or should I go on to the next little bit? I've got, 10 minutes? Yeah, 10 minutes. Okay. So most people don't have 192 PCIX sockets. So I was trying to figure out how I can make this talk a bit more interesting. So I decided to compare. So I decided to look at boot speed on my laptop and my wife's laptop. They're actually very similar. There's very little difference. The only difference is that we've got different alpha drivers, but they both take almost a second. So that gives us one place we need to look. So how did I generate this? Because that's a bit more. Okay. So there's a couple of useful things you can do when building a kernel if you want to try and diagnose what's going on with your boot time, where all your speed's going. The first is to turn on the debug print k time option. And that's what prints out those the things in square brackets before the lines that you're all familiar with. The other thing you can do is a boot option, which is init call debug. And what that does is it tells you, right before it calls each of the init calls, it tells you, it gives you the function name and the address, but you don't care about the address, you just care about the function name. So you can see in this picture that we called ACPI EC init at 17.711456, and then near microseconds later, we called ACPI PCI boot init. So that's a lot of information. It's kind of hard to get a grasp of. So I wrote a little Perl script and came up with a list of the top offenders here. So you see IDE init takes a good long time. And this is where you see me being chicken, because I haven't actually configured this machine to use the Libarta parallel ATA. My wife's smiling sweetly at me because this is her machine. I have every confidence in my own code. Really. One of really stands out to me as being interesting is taking so long is USB LP. Why is the USB printer taking 0.8 of a second to initialize? That just seems wrong to me. We're doing something stupid there. Was that a useful suggestion or a heckle? Yeah, okay. I don't know why I built the USB printer into my configuration. Oh yeah, I should point out you don't get any of this if you build modules, because those aren't done as init calls; those are done in user space. So I don't know how long the ITW 2200 takes to come up, because I have to have that in users. I have to have this for module because it has to load its firmware. Actually, I have a patch for that, but never mind. USB is quite prominent. We've got 4 seconds doing UHCI in it. And we've got 1 second doing EHCI in it. And that's because we have 4 UHCI devices and 1 EHCI device. So clearly, it's taking us a long time there, and that's clearly a fruitful avenue of investigation for someone. The Yenta socket is a little different between my laptop and my wife's. I don't know why. Hers, it's taking 0.38. Mine, it's taking 0.9, over 0.9. It's the top offender on my list of boot time. Alpha is high for both of us. Different drivers. She's got Intel HDA audio, and I've got Intel i8-10 audio. But they both take a long time. So if anyone's here from Elsa, they might want to look into why the initialization takes so long. Now, okay, it's only 0.4 of a second. But all these 0.4 of a seconds are adding up. I mean, it's taking a good long time to boot a laptop these days. And I still yearn for the days when I could turn on my machine and I'd get a prompt straight away. So, thank you.
Are there any other questions for Willie before we go? No? All right, I'll just give him his speaker's gift, which I'm sure he'll put to good use, which is some Linux Confa U schooner glasses.
They're beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks, Willie.